another old idea cast aside. I was taught that the road to God is a very straight, very narrow path. If you fall off either side of it, you're going to hell as sure as anything. The book says we found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. So another old idea cast aside, that maybe this road that I'm going to travel to finding God is not as straight and not as narrow and not as rigid as I was taught that it was. Also, it is open to all men, period. Not just those who believe as they believe, but to all men, period, and women. So an old idea cast aside, a new idea takes its place. Page 47.
So when, therefore, we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies, too, to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice.
Now remember, prejudice is old ideas.
Do not let any old ideas you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. All I have to do is ask myself what these things and these spiritual expressions I hear in this book, what do they mean to me? Just me. And at the start, this was all that we needed to commence growth, to affect our first conscious relationship with God as we understood Him. And then afterwards, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach. But that was growth. If he wished to grow, sometimes it was gross, you're right. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. Now we needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe?
The agnostic has always believed in some kind of God. The agnostic just didn't turn to God to seek God's help. But we've always, as an agnostic, believed in some kind of God.
Or am I even willing to believe?
The atheist who says there is no God, all they have to do is be willing to believe that there is a God.
That there's a power greater than myself. And as soon as a man can say that he does believe,
agnostic,
or is willing to believe,
atheist,
we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Again, the asterisk, please be sure to read Appendix 2 on spiritual experience. If we can't find a power greater than ourselves, at least find one other than ourselves.
You know, here the asterisk is tying together the wonderfully effective spiritual structure with the spiritual experience. And that's what we're building as we progress through the steps. This wonderfully effective spiritual structure will eventually end up as a spiritual experience or the spiritual awakening. And we're going to be building this structure as we progress through the program. Way back in Bill's story, he said willingness was the foundation of that structure. And that's step one. Step two, believing, we're going to see is the cornerstone of that structure. And that's going to be step two. And then later on, we're going to put some more stones in place. Eventually, we're going to build that spiritual structure. We're going to pass through it to freedom, and we're going to recover from alcoholism. So he's really beginning to paint now a picture in our mind as we go through this thing of the structure that we're going to build. And the wonderfully effective spiritual structure is the spiritual experience. Now, he said that was great news for us. For we'd assume we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seem difficult to believe. Now here Bill separates the words belief and faith. And one problem I always had, as a kid growing up in church, the minister always said, son, all you got to do is have faith and everything will be all right. Well, faith implies surety. Faith implies knowledge. Faith is after the fact information. I had no faith that God would do for me what I couldn't do for myself because I'd never really tried to get God to do that. So how would I know that He would? The best thing I can do is to start with belief. Belief is upfront information. Belief can be nothing more than just suspicion. Let me give you a good example in our everyday lives. Let's say I moved into this Torrance, California area. And a month or two after I get here, I've got a problem with my automobile. Now, I don't know a good mechanic anywhere in this area. But you've been here for years, and I assume you'll know somebody. So I come to you and I say, look, I've got a problem with my car. I need a good mechanic. Can you recommend anybody? And you say, well, sure. Take it over there to Jack's place. He'll do you a reasonable price or to do you a good job, and he'll charge you a reasonable price. Well, I don't know whether that's true or not. The best I can possibly do with that information is if I believe it's strong enough, I'll take my automobile over to Jack. Sure enough, he does a good job, charges me a reasonable price. When I leave there, I know that he will do that. When I went there, I believed he would do that. Now, 6 months from now, I have trouble with my automobile again. I don't ask you or anybody else where to take it. I take it right back to Jack. Only this time, I took it on faith. And we can't start with faith. The best we can possibly do is to start with belief. And all we have to do to start this building of this wonderfully effective spiritual structure is say to ourselves, do I now believe? I've always believed in some kind of God. Or am I even willing to believe that there is a power greater than myself? And the book says if we can answer that question, then we're already on the way simply by believing.
You know, one time, well, a long time ago, I was with my first wife. I was trying to get back home, and she was pretty good handed about going to church. And I went to church with her for a little while and went in and had a little visitation with the preacher. Thought I'd show up there and try to get a little, you know, a few points. And so I went and talked to this preacher, and he asked me, he said, well, Joe, what seems to be your problem? Well, I don't know what the problem is, so I tell him what I think it is, and it's her. Really, if you live with her, you drink too, I said. Well, he gave me a solution, and they'll do that, you know. And he said, you must, and boy, he emphasized that word, you must have faith in these things, and he told me what they were. And I just looked at him and looked at him, and I couldn't do that. Because how can you have faith in something that you don't even believe? Thank God in AA we can come to believe. It didn't say we come to have faith in the beginning. It said we could come to believe. And that's what I had to do, was come to believe. And then later on today, I have faith. But that was to be a while before I got to that. Let's go to page 51 now.
If I know I need the power, which I do, I've already admitted I'm powerless. If I know the beginning of the finding of the power is just to believe or even be willing to believe, that's the starting point. The next thing I need to know is what procedures am I going to follow in order to be able to find that power. Let's go to page 51, first paragraph.
He said, this world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than all the millenniums went before. Almost everyone knows the reasons. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Yet in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. And I used to wonder, how is it that we have cell phones and cars and televisions and all the modern appliances that we have, and why didn't they have that 200 years ago or 500 years ago, or are we just smarter than they are? Well, he said that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Intellect meaning the capacity to learn. They had the same capacity to learn as we did. But you see, the problem was with them was that they were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. That's why we need an open mind, so that we can move on in this idea of the spiritual. You know, this superstition, tradition, all sorts of fixed ideas, even right here in our country some 225 years ago, people went to the northeast corner of our country, and they came over there for religious freedom. In other words, you were supposed to be able to practice your religion in any way that you possibly wanted to. But if you would practice your religion somewhat like they did, you were okay. But if you had any ideas that were different than some of the people in the group conscious of that area, sometimes, and you expressed them, they would burn you at the stake for being a witch. So if you had any ideas that was different than the group conscious of that area, you kept them to yourself, didn't you? So we had a lot of superstition and tradition and all sorts of fixed ideas even then. But I think we've grown considerably over these last 225 years. But even today, I need an open mind today more than I've ever needed an open mind, because I can get hung up with superstition and tradition and all sorts of fixed ideas today if I would. And I'd put my God as I understand him in a little box and say he's not any more than this. You see, and God's bigger, for me, is bigger than me and bigger than all of us. So I just kind of keep an open mind in that area all the time.
In the realm of the material, man's mind were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth was preposterous. You know, I think Columbus is one of the greatest examples of what you can do just based on belief. Not on faith, not on knowledge, but just on belief. And as we go back and look at what occurred with Columbus, you've got to believe that Columbus had to be alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Absolutely had to be. Because you've got to be tough, you've got to be stubborn to stand there and express a belief which is entirely different from the rest of the world. All the rest of the world thought the earth was flat. And Columbus was tough enough and strong enough to stand there and say, I don't believe she's flat. I believe it's round. Another reason we think Columbus was probably alcoholic is when he left, he didn't know where he was going. And when he got there, he didn't know where he was. And when he got back, he didn't even know where he had been. But what really made him alcoholic is a woman financed the whole trip for him. You're the alcoholic.
She did that twice.
By being willing to believe different, Columbus changed everybody on earth. Some 500 years ago, a little more than that, most of what they thought was the civilized world was centered around the shores of the Mediterranean Sea, maybe the western shores of Europe. And they were fettered by trying to discover anything new by superstition. And they had found a place called the East Indies. And the only way you could get to the East Indies was to sail to the northeast end of the Mediterranean, then go by land, camelback, footback, horseback, however they traveled. Took literally years to make that trip. And they were trying to find a new trade route to the East Indies so they could get there, get that stuff, and get it back faster.